My name's Chris Cole from Drone Wars UK. I've been running Drone Wars, which monitors the increasing use of drones and also other emerging technology for about 15 years now. In 2010, we started. And so over time, we've seen huge changes in this issue. And you know, the use of drones is kind of expanding all the time.
So what was it all that time ago, and it does seem like a long time, that made you think this is an important campaign to get started?
Well, I started reading about drones in about 2008. So the UK first acquired an armed drone in 2007. And I think it was fairly quickly that I could see these systems were going to have a real impact, because it enabled the military to use armed force at a distance with little risk to themselves. So they could conduct strikes and engage in warfare and overcome what at that time was becoming a real issue for them, which is, you know, public reluctance, public antipathy towards military intervention. And these systems have enabled both militaries and increasingly so more recently non-state actors to take to use force without risk themselves.
And what about the actual psychology of the soldier? I mean, it seems a bit peculiar, doesn't it? It's almost like you're a kind of soldier sitting playing a video game, but you're actually killing people. There must be some, you know, some kind of, well, some people might be reluctant to do that. Others might just see, oh, it's just like a video game, I'm enjoying this.
Well, there is whole kind of arguments and debates about the impact of on the use of remote systems, drones, on the operators. Some people make the argument that it turns them into what they psychologically call the chair force. That is, you know, as you say, sitting in an air-conditioned bunker somewhere, not really engaged in war. And to be honest, the military does have a lot of problem recruiting and retaining drone pilots in particular. But others argue that it does have a really important psychological impact on drone pilots, drone operators, because they get to see very close up, really, the impact of attacks, whereas previously they would be dropping bombs from 10, 15,000 feet and they didn't really see the impact. But now the cameras do show them that, you know, that people are dying. There are all sorts of arguments about what drone operators can actually see, and a lot of the kind of video is very classified. But it's undoubtedly that people do experience, you know, a lot more of war firsthand, even though they're thousands of miles away. So the debate about this, the impact on drone operators, is still ongoing. Here in the UK, we get very little chance to have firsthand accounts from British drone pilots. But in the US, drone pilots have, a number of drone pilots have come out and talked about the kind of psychological impact on them. But also drone war is now spreading right around the world. Many more countries are now using drones. So we should have, hopefully soon, more testimony, first-hand testimony from those operating drones.
Yeah, now, isn't this a technology that may have, I mean, it's one of those sort of cutting-edge things, as you were talking about, in the noughties. Did you think it was actually being used quite a long time before the military admitted to it? Because it was at the time a very cutting edge technology. You wouldn't expect the military to just say, hey, look what we've got.
Kind of drones go back decades. I mean, certainly the US military were using drones in the Vietnam War, but they weren't carrying out strikes. Marrying these kind of remote control systems, enabling them to launch strikes, occurred, you know, around about 2000-2001, and it was right after 9/11 happened that the US deployed armed drones for the first time to Afghanistan. And you know, their use was very secret then. There was very little detail about them. Some of the detail about the early strikes have come out since. For instance, we know the first targeted killing using a drone occurred in Yemen in 2004. And it was about 2004 that Israel then started using armed drones. So it wasn't long after that that the UK became involved. And there weren't a huge number of strikes in the first 5 years or so. But once Afghanistan, the war in Afghanistan and Iraq happened, it's mushroomed and, taken off since then.
Well, what's the actual infrastructure? I think I can remember quite a long time ago an article in The Intercept by Glenn Greenwald about that actually one of the major hubs for the US drone program in Afghanistan was actually in Germany. So where are the actual operators, and whereabouts are the sort of hubs for coordinating these drones, for the actual communications hubs?
Well, the kind of whole architecture of drone war is very widespread. It's important to know that the drone itself is just the tip of the iceberg. Below that, hidden, is this huge data capture, data analysis, data distribution infrastructure that kind of both feeds drone warfare and feeds off drone warfare.
Well, so is this a sort of satellite-driven kind of Google Maps on steroids type thing?
Well, it is, but all sorts of signal intelligence gathering equipment is used to gather information, cell phones, wireless routers, all sorts of electronic emissions are gathered. And sometimes that's, you know, focused on particular individuals. And other times it's kind of more widespread, more dynamic to see, you know, drones are flying over a particular area. But you're right about Ramstein being a key, Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany being a key location. That's where the primary satellite link is. So the downlink from US satellites. So video and information from drones operating in the Middle East goes via satellite and comes down to Ramstein. And then goes via a cable to the US to what's called the Distributed Common Ground System, which is this huge infrastructure throughout the US. There's also a link here in the UK, which kind of is used to control the drones, but also control the intelligence gathered by drones.
Okay, do we know where that is?
Well, it was at... Oh my goodness, it's just dropped out of my head. Wytham, RAF Wytham. But the Pathfinder building there. That's the kind of center of UK defense intelligence. So it's RAF Wytham, I understand. Yeah.
Well, we mentioned video a few times. Is there any evidence that kids playing video games, teenagers, whatever, are kind of being groomed when they're on those games and being picked up and, you know, maybe even tapped up to do this job?
Well, certainly the British Armed Forces use video games as a way of recruiting, enticing people into the armed forces. The armed forces have a huge problem with recruitment at the moment.
They do.
We're constantly getting MPs standing up in Parliament and saying how awful it is that Crapita are not able to deliver on their contract for recruitment. But the basic fact is young people these days don't really want to go into the armed forces, or not enough, according to the armed forces. So they're doing all this outreach to try and encourage people. And one of the ways on the website, you can go to RAF website, and you know, there are in the recruitment sites, they have, you know, little online video games that you can play at being a drone pilot. And that's a way of drawing people in to this. You know, the reality is it's obviously very hard. You can't just do a video game and say, I want to be a drone pilot. But that's the way they try and entice young people into joining the armed forces.
You mentioned non-state actors at the beginning, Chris. I mean, you know, we all think of armed forces like the, or that maybe the RAF or whoever, the British Army using drones. But who are they?
Well, we've seen over the last, I suppose, 5 years, the kind of growth in the use of what's called one-way attack drones, or suicide drones, they're called. So these are small area vehicles, kind of akin to a missile, really, but use elements of drone technology. So they're not reusable. So we kind of think of drones like the Predator or the Reaper or the, you know, the Bayraktar or the Hermes, Israeli drones, all these drones.
If people don't know, Chris, these are kind of like mini planes, aren't they? They take off from runways. They're actually quite big, maybe as long as your living room, that kind of thing. But they're not these smaller ones that we're more familiar with.
Absolutely, Tony. Yeah. So these the traditional drones that we think about, like the Predator drone, are very large aircraft. They take off and are used hundreds of times. They take off, launch missiles, or undertake surveillance missiles. The kind of new kind of drones, there's two types of new drones that come in. Drones that are much smaller and can't fly for very long, for maybe an hour or two, whereas the kind of Predator, Reaper tend to fly for around 24 hours at a time. But smaller drones, pretty much like the commercial drones you can go out and buy now, fly for an hour or two and can fly for a few kilometers. So there's the kind of large drones, small drones. But now we have these one-way attack drones, which can fly for hundreds, sometimes thousands of kilometers, depending on their size. So often they're not quite as large as a small aircraft, but not far off it, maybe six or 8 feet long, and carry the warhead inside. So the drone is destroyed as it explodes. So that's why it's got the name suicide drone
I don't like that term. We think of the kamikaze pilots of the Japanese Air Force in the Second World War. And, of course, that was a human being involved.
Exactly.
It seems to me, I mean, a better term might be a one-way drone, because no one's dying apart from the person being killed, are they?
Exactly.
So how widespread are these?
They're increasingly widespread. We're seeing a lot of use in Ukraine and Russia. We're seeing, as I say, a lot of non-state groups like the Houthis are using these to attack shipping in the Red Sea. But we've also seen them used in Iraq. I mean, it really grew out of ISIS beginning to use them. And I think, you know, we can argue that they've learned drone warfare from the US and other states like the UK and Israel using this remote technology. And they've adapted and learned and are now turning that back on ourselves.
Well, look, you brought up another fascinating topic there. Is this something that has simply been led by the West rather than other countries like China and Russia?
Yes. I mean, we're constantly told that, you know, we're at threat, or, you know, Russia is developing or China are developing these systems. Russia is far, far behind other countries in this matter. China is a big developer and a big exporter, but it is the UK and the US that are the main user of armed drone technology, and Israel, of course. But the other new big user I should mention is Turkey. Turkey is really using drones both in Iraq and Syria. But it's also exporting large numbers of armed drones to other countries, particularly in Africa, where there have been huge numbers of civilian casualty incidents where armed forces in Ethiopia, in Mali, Burkina Faso are using armed drones to launch strikes against what they call militants, against terrorists. And so drone warfare is really spreading now. We don't hear much about it. You know, the mainstream media, as you say, focuses on only one particular conflict, the conflict in Ukraine and Russia. And, you know, we have seen a lot recently about Israel and Gaza. But there are many, many other conflicts taking place around the world that aren't really covered.
I can remember seeing some a photograph of I think it was a raptor, like a buzzard or something, attacking a drone. Is that real? Does this ever happen? Because obviously the birds must be a little bit flummoxed when one of these things, especially a small one, flies by and maybe decide, well, I'm not having that.
Yes, yeah, there have been many, many cases of both animals, but also people attacking drones. People don't particularly like to have drones flying over them, surveilling them. So all sorts of, and that's the same, you know, we've seen a number of times birds, large birds attacking drones, smaller drones.
Well, yes. And what about the anti-drone technology? How's that going? The idea to have some sort of defence system against these as a drone comes over the horizon, just taking it out somehow?
Yes, of course, that's a whole new industry that has grown up over the last decade. You know, there is this cycle, isn't there, of kind of military companies developing a new weapon system, and then at the same time, they also develop a counter weapon system. So there are a number of different technologies, mainly at the moment focusing around jamming the communications between the operator and the drone itself. But some of the drones that fly, the kind of real issue that we are seeing now is autonomy coming more and more into drone warfare. And drones really are the gateway to autonomous weapon systems. So there are kind of two issues about this, two ways in which autonomy is coming in. One is in relation to the data infrastructure that I talked about, where autonomy is being introduced to analyze huge amounts of data that are being captured by drones and captured in all sorts of ways. So, for instance, at the moment, we're seeing in Gaza, Israel using a system called Hasbora, which is an AI system that trawls through various data sets that they've captured over the last however many years, and using that to produce targets in Gaza. And we've seen real upswing. The IDF are very proud of this and proud of talking about how normally they would, intelligence, they would produce around 50 targets a week. They're now producing 100 targets a day. So,
well,
you know, that's
not,
one way.
Hang on, Chris. Sorry, they shouldn't be proud of this. If we go back to the 1930s, IBM, as they were at the time in the United States, was hiring out these Hollerith machines to the Nazis, who were then using exactly what you were just talking about in Gaza, data sets on these punch card system, as it was at the time, not actually on hard drives or floppy disks or whatever. But this whole system was, the Hollerith system was documented by Edwin Black in his book IBM and the Holocaust. So this is a very dangerous concept, isn't it? These massive data sets, I think we know from the 1930s how they can be used. And it seems that they're just literally copying the techniques of IBM and the Holocaust and actually mimicking that system with a much more powerful, up-to-date database system rather than the silly old punch cards.
Well, yes. I mean, we know it's long been recognized and acknowledged that the kind of, you know, structures of injustice in our society are embedded in our data, in our data sets. So, for instance, in Israel, in Gaza, where Israel captures all sorts of data about Palestinians, and that's fed into a data set, and the kind of assumptions and misinformation and prejudices against Palestinians are enshrined in that data set. And that data set is then trawled by AIs to come up with targets. And the problem, of course, is that it's not possible for humans to oversee this work. So there's a real concern about how AI is coming into and being used to analyze data.
I mean, does it not, when it comes up with the target, that system say, well, this person is a target because, I don't know, maybe, for example, they spoke to a member of Hamas or they voted for Hamas or this sort of thing? Does it not say, well, this person is a target because it just says, well, we recommend you kill this person? Is that how it works, this Hasbara thing?
Well, we just don't know because there is not enough transparency about how it actually works. All we know about it is what these IDF say about it, and that's heavily censored and heavily controlled. But yes, it will be capturing, you know, relationships data. So if somebody lives in the same neighborhood or has met somebody, you know, all that kind of information is kept and fed into these data sets and
maybe
databases.
Say they've messaged them on their phone, all this sort of thing. So this is a completely autonomous system of saying, basically, kill this person, kill that person. But then what about the other end when it actually comes to doing the job?
Well, there is a real push now towards to develop autonomous drones. And, you know, in some ways that may be not so troubling. So, for instance, there is kind of like the autonomy of the movement of the system. It's more like an automatic pilot. But what is of a real concern is allowing systems themselves to decide which target and how to kill and to launch the use of force. At the moment, I think there is general acknowledgement that that would be unlawful because machines cannot differentiate between civilians and combatants, for example, cannot work out the ability of whether it's a legitimate military target or what the advantages of undertaking the strike. So that's all far too complicated for machines. But the problem is there is a real push to allow machines to do this and to develop the technology to allow machines to do this, because one of the weak links for drones is the electronic communications, and that's becoming jammed. So the military and military thinkers and strategists are arguing that we need to kind of free the drones, if you like, and allow them to undertake these processes, and allow them to be much more autonomous and make the decisions themselves. So there is a real pushback around the world against this, but unfortunately, you know, military strategists hold a lot of power and a lot of sway over politicians and are persuading them that, you know, as you say, they will argue that China is doing this or Russia is doing it, so we need to keep up with them. The reality is that it's Western firms that are very much pushing the development of autonomous weapon systems.
Yeah,
well, and the government have said recently that you know, an international treaty banning autonomous weapon systems is a threat to national security, and so that's the kind of, you know, what we're facing at the moment.
Well, yeah, and the idea that the Israeli Defense Force is going to obey the law, I think, is also a little bit questionable. We've heard a bit about these autonomous killer drones. But one of the things, if people have been watching the Gaza coverage on places like Al Jazeera, you've almost constantly got the buzzing of drones overhead. I suppose these are just sitting there taking pictures, are they? Or do we know?
Yes, you know, there are huge numbers of surveillance drones gathering intelligence, undertaking reconnaissance, monitoring what's going on. And that's one of the things that people in Palestine complain of, as you say, the noise, this kind of constant psychological pressure of constantly being watched. And it's not, as you say, silence. There is this buzzing around, and that buzzing is not accidental. It's deliberate to, you know, it's a psychological pressure from the occupiers to say, we are watching you. So, you know, even though these systems aren't armed, some of these systems aren't armed, they are having a very negative impact.
Yeah, I mean, just as an anecdote, I go for walks on, it's quite nice down at Salisbury Plain, particularly in the spring. And there's lots of areas that you can walk around. This is where the military does its training around the city of Salisbury and in the UK here. And I can remember sitting there and thinking, what's that? You know, and you could, I could just about make out in the, I don't know, must have been a maybe about, maybe somewhere between 500 and 1,000 feet up in the air, totally silent. And it was a drone looking at us, just lying there in the grass, you know, innocently, obviously keeping an eye on us. So they can make these things silent. In fact, sometimes they want them to be silent, can't they?
Sorry. Yes, indeed. There are hundreds and hundreds of different types of drones now. It's very difficult to keep track of them all, and they all have kind of slightly different capabilities and undertake slightly different tasks. But it's very much spreading.
Yeah, a growth industry. So this obviously, when you know, when you hear the government say, "Oh, these great high tech sectors, that's where Britain is going to." This seems to me that they don't want to mention drones, but that's what they're talking about. And what about in Ukraine? Another conflict where these have been being used increasingly. In fact, one of the things to look at particularly there is the extent to which drones have been used against the Russians to do things like drone attacks, and they seem to be almost the Russians seem to be unable to deal with these Russian drone attacks on Russian cities and many Russian ships being sunk. Now I think it's almost half the Black Sea fleet has been sunk.
We're seeing huge amounts of drone attacks and use of drones in Ukraine and Russia. Russia has imported large numbers of the kind of Shahed drone from Iran, which was a big surprise to me, I must say. And those are the kind of one-way attack drones, and they're being used a lot against Ukrainian cities. But the Ukraine are also undertaking drone attacks against Russian forces in Ukraine, but also against military targets, as far as I can see, in Russia, but also civilian targets. So we know, for instance, that there were a number of Ukrainian drone strikes against oil terminals in Russia over the last week or 10 days or so. But the primary use of drones in Ukraine is what's called FPV, first-person view drones. Well, this is a whole new development of very small drones that grew out, believe it or not, of racing drones, where people used to race against each other. And the camera feed comes directly into the glasses, the viewing goggles of the pilot. So the pilot it feels like they're actually flying, and they direct these drones directly into Russian tanks, Russian personnel, all sorts of ways. And that's the primary use for surveillance and a small attack against forces in Ukraine and Russia.
I noticed last week 10,000 drones being sold by Britain to Ukraine. So you do wonder sometimes, don't you, when we hear these announcements that, you know, the British government is giving this money or lending this money. They don't usually say lending. They're usually saying there is money for Ukraine. But that money, it seems to me, may be just coming straight back to the British arms firms.
Of course, yes. And there's a whole issue around that UK supplying, they said, attack drones to Ukraine. A number of journalists have been trying to follow that up and figure out what this technology is. And it seems to be a lot of smoke and mirrors around this. I think there are lots of announcements made for PR and disinformation around this. So I would be slightly wary until we get more details. The UK is not that good at producing the kind of drones that they were talking about selling. And I suspect there's something more to this story than we know.
Idea of this is, you know, there's all sorts of ethics tied up in this. Can you just take us through that for a minute? Because, as you say, there is a pushback by, you know, even these sort of people in universities that deal with this sort of thing, and to a certain extent journalists. But there is a pushback against the use of drones generally, which seems to be, failing, really, completely failing. So what do you think are the big future ethical arguments that are going to be made and are being made about the use of drones more and more around the world?
Well, I think in a way we tried for many years, and you're right, we have failed to prevent the proliferation. We kind of argued, a number of people were arguing about the dangers of drone technology, this idea of being undertake risk-free warfare. To launch lethal force at great distance with no risk to yourself. And we talked about that for many years, and we're kind of pushing for an international treaty to limit the proliferation of these systems. But unfortunately, it has to be acknowledged that we failed at that, and the cat is out of the bag. And I think that's coming back to haunt us now. We're already seeing non-state groups use this technology to attack British forces. We're seeing groups in Iraq and Syria using drones to attack US forces. So we were the ones who were primarily using this technology. Now it's coming back to haunt us. So I think that's one of the issues. Second issue is around, as we've talked about, autonomy, the use of the growing marrying of autonomous technology with remote technology to enable lethal autonomous weapon systems, and the whole limits of around that. Are we going to allow machines to decide that they can kill human beings? And there is huge ethical and legal issues around that. People talk about the debate around autonomy a lot, and we've had these great summits, international conferences, but behind the scenes, it's going ahead very, very rapidly. The UK and the US government are developing right now what they're called autonomous combat aircraft, which will accompany the next generation aircraft and will be, for all intents and purposes, lethal autonomous weapon systems. They argue that there will be a human in the loop, but it will be very difficult for any human to kind of stay on top of the speed of these systems. And it will really just be a human rubber stamping the decision of the machine to launch force. And I think, you know, we have to prevent that. You know, we really do have to prevent that, because once we get to the stage where machines are given the authority of life over death, over humanity, we really have crossed the Rubicon.
Finally, the biggest, for me, one of the biggest surprises is to see the use of drones in the Red Sea attacking merchant shipping. This is, and also, of course, the trialing a lot of this new technology to stop the drones. There's headlines again and again I've seen the last few weeks, you know, British warship shoots down drones in Red Sea. And that seems to be one of the most active battlefields right now.
Yes, absolutely. And although, you know, you would argue, well, the drones are being shot down, they're not having much impact. But these are like $5,000 drones being shot down by $1 or $2 million missiles. So, you know, these non-state groups, the Houthi, will be delighted that the UK and the US are spending such huge amounts of money to defeat a very small drone. So drone warfare is happening right around the world now. We hear about it in Gaza. We hear about it in the Red Sea. We hear a little bit about it in Ukraine. But it's happening in Turkey, Syria, Ethiopia, Azerbaijan. Many conflicts around the world now are where our actors are turning towards this remote technology, and we need to challenge that, I think.
Yeah, we certainly do. And it's brought us this thing called the double tap that I'd not heard of before. The drone strikes in Afghanistan and Yemen we're talking about here, where either at a funeral or a wedding, you get a one drone strike. And then about 15, 20 minutes later, as the emergency services have arrived and people are being saved, another one. Which really is the epitome of evil. So, Chris, what's the best way for listeners to find you, follow your work?
Well, thanks, Tony. It's dronewars.net is our website, and you can follow us there or on Twitter or Facebook or all the socials, as they say.
And when is anything happening around the world to sort of push back against drones that you're involved in?
Well, there are always ongoing protests, various protests that are taking place at bases. There are particular times of the year. So later in the year, there is what's called Keep Space for Peace Week. And there are kind of regular protests then. But yeah, if people want to get in touch, if people are interested in getting involved in campaigning, we're always interested.
Yeah, well, there's things like the campaign against the arms trade as well. They're probably involved in all this, I imagine. And then we here in Bristol, we had the delight of an arms fair at Ashton Gate, where at the Bristol City Football Stadium the other week. So this stuff is always going on. Chris Cole, thanks very much for joining us.
You're very welcome, Tony.